I'm Betsy Payette. Marilyn McCarney and I are interviewing personnel who were or are instrumental in developing Renfrew Museum and Park. Today is June 9, 1992, and we are interviewing Dr. W. Lehman Guyton, an original board member of Renfrew Museum and Park. Dr. Guyton has moved away from Waynesboro and is currently living in Cockeysville, Maryland.
Good. Several years ago, I don't recall the exact date, my wife and I were at a party at the Nicodemus home, and I remember very distinctly Emmy Nicodemus and I sitting on the Maryland bench, which was in the hall, talking about collecting antiques. And the subject came up about what to do with the collection after one had died. She asked me what we were going to do with our collection. Well, I had no idea. And at that time, she hinted, but did not say definitely, that she was talking about a museum. Further details, she didn't give. And I heard nothing about it after that time. But when the will was published, the contents of the will did come as a surprise, as well as my role as a trustee. And I think I was selected because of our mutual interest in antiques and my acquaintance with the collection in her home. I do not recall anyone suggesting at that time that the borough not accept the gift from Mrs. Nicodemus. As you know, had the borough turned it down, it would have been offered to the state of Pennsylvania to be operated as a museum. And if they refused, it was the house, the property, and the contents were to be sold, and the benefits were to go to the hospital. The original board of directors, or trustees, composed of Chester Adams, Leroy Maxwell, Helen Hoover Hoffman, Bill Bowers, Ed Miller, and I. Harold Shook and Anson Good were also named in the will, but both of them withdrew because of conflict of interest. In other words, they were controlling the trust at the First National Bank, and they thought they better not be involved intimately with the operation of the museum. Someone else was on the board at that time, and I can't remember who that was. But anyway, we had a very good group, and I have a very high regard for my fellow members of the board. Bill Bowers, I don't know whether you know Bill or not, but Bill's a fine fellow, a very knowledgeable man with a good eye. And he knew where to ferret out the great items that should be in a museum like Renfrew. And he had the interest of the museum at heart. And of course, he had advised Mrs. Nicodemus on what to buy and how to buy and when to buy it. And also another man here in town who was very active in helping the Nicodemuses build the collection, and that was Dr. Mark Heefner, who was part dentist and part antique dealer, more interested in the latter, I think, than the practice of dentistry. And Mark was really quite a fellow. I was amazed at Mrs. Nicodemus's generosity and her forethought in providing funds for its perpetuity. I was pleased and honored to be included as a trustee and accepted in hopes of being able to make a worthwhile contribution to the establishment and the operation of the museum. Yes, I did have some misgivings based primarily on several years of experience as a museum trustee elsewhere. Namely, the urgency to open the museum within a definite period of time. Mrs. Nicodemus stipulated, and I don't remember the exact number of months, but it was definitely stated in the will that the museum had to be open within that period of time. I was concerned about the expense involved in opening the new road. That was also stipulated in the will, that the entrance off Main Street not be used, but a new road be constructed onto Antietam Road, or whatever that road is. I was concerned about the cost of that. And I was also very much concerned from the very beginning, and it has continued to be a concern of mine, the balance of interest in the park versus the museum. And another thing that was a great concern to me was the security of the premises at all times. After Mrs. Nicodemus died, of course, Ed Miller lived just a short distance away, but hoodlums and vandals can outwit mostly anyone. And it was a concern, so one of the first things we did was to establish a security system as an absolute necessity, because you must remember the trustees are morally and legally responsible for everything in a museum and even on the premises. One of the first hurdles I think that we had to meet a jump was that this wasn't a Williamsburg-type house. Everyone thought, isn't this great? We'll have a Williamsburg-type house in Waynesboro. It was a difficult point to get across, but this was a native stone dwelling for hard-working farmers, and not the deluxe residences that you see on your tour, on your tours of Williamsburg. Initially, there was much confusion in my mind and the minds of others as to how to proceed. This was a totally new venture for the community, and there were various ideas, and various ideas and interpretations of the intention of Mrs. Nicodemus in her will. Should we let the house remain as she had lived in it, and if so, open it a few hours each week, with an occasional visitor rapping on the door, and having a guided tour by a little old lady with tennis shoes and a ring of keys? Or should the thrust be toward restoring the house to the 1830 era and furnished accordingly? This was a big decision, but I felt the right direction was taken, and that was to step back in time and within reason restore the house to something like the original. We called in consultants, the National Heritage. They recommended very highly a young lady, a fine young lady from the University of Delaware. She was a winter tour graduate student. She was a fine girl. I can't remember her name, but I will tell you something rather interesting about her. She had recently married, and she and her husband came here on Saturday afternoon, and my wife and I took them out to dinner that evening. They were a delightful couple. They had just gotten an apartment in Wilmington with a little garden plot in the back, and they were so happy. The morning before they came down here, they put in their tomato plants. And I said, I don't know why I asked, but I said, how many did you put in? They said, 18. I said, good heavens. Oh, they said, isn't that enough? So she worked along with National Heritage, and with other consultants, she researched court records, made paint samples, drew up plans, and talked with people who were acquainted with the house before Mr. and Mrs. Nicodemus bought it. The Nicodemuses obviously had made many changes in that house in order to make it livable. So they added a bathroom and a modern kitchen, and removed the partition between what is now the front parlor and the room in the back. When the Nicodemuses lived there, that was one large room. She also created a small breakfast room type area inside the porch door. Now, not inside the main door, but inside the porch door. The trustees were hard put to get organized and start the remodeling to meet the deadline. Much of the credit for the successful completion of the project goes to Borough Manager Dick Miller. And the townspeople and trustees should never, never forget the great contribution that he made of his time, his talent, and actual physical labor. Because Dick Miller was a fellow, type fellow who would get in and pitch in and help do the work. And he also had a great appreciation for the aesthetic value of the collection, which was another great plus on his behalf. So yes, the museum was opened within the required time, but it was a hazardous trip from the old kitchen, as the random floorboards in the kitchen had not been replaced, as many of them were lost and had to be gotten elsewhere. So there was a narrow catwalk leading to the dining room. Finally, remodeling was complete. Where do we go from here? Mrs. Nicodemus had many elaborate and valuable furnishings, but one must bear in mind that in an 1830 to 31 farmhouse, such a dwelling did not have fancy draperies, oriental rugs, crystal chandeliers, fine china, and collectibles sitting all about. In fact, probably, it was a dirt floor in the kitchen, and the chickens had free access from an overgrown, unmowed yard. A compromise had to be reached. The old house restored as close to the original as practical, yet with high-styled furnishings in most areas. The elaborate crystal chandelier in the dining room appeared to be horribly and dreadfully out of place. It had been salvaged by the Nicodemuses when the old Rennert Hotel in Baltimore was dismantled. Over great objections from many people, the fixture was removed. Also during the remodeling, we had not interference, but we had to comply very strictly with the fire regulations and health regulations. So there's a lot of state regulations that had to be met, and that created quite a problem before we could open the house to the public. And of course, we wanted to do it safely. There was also a great hue and cry from a militant group who violently opposed the course which the trustees had taken. Some of the group had daily talks with Mrs. Nicodemus to learn of her intentions, even though she had gone to her reward several years before. A town meeting, or something close to it, was held in council chambers, so all views could be heard. But fortunately, it had little effect upon our plans for the museum. Jim Koenig came as curator. Jim was a good fellow, knowledgeable, willing to learn, and above all, was a skilled woodworker and built many display cases and other items. At this point, or perhaps earlier, we made two observations. First, the museum had to be a dynamic place with changing exhibits. If not, why would one return after the first visit? As a result, emphasis was placed on the revolving exhibits in one of the rooms on the second floor. These proved quite popular and were reasons for return visits. Second, and I think we can thank Jim Koenig for this, a museum such as Renfrew cannot be everything to everybody. So they established a focus, which at that time was on John Bell and related potters of the area. The barn was renovated, and that project was initiated by Jim, and it was made possible through the funds from a legacy from Dan Ruth, who divided his estate between, I think I'm correct in saying, Renfrew, the library, and the YMCA. The building or the remodeling of the barn accomplished two purposes. One, as I say, to display the fine collection of John Bell pottery, which incidentally is probably the finest collection in the country. And also, it provided a much needed meeting space. Excuse me. About this time, after the barn was opened, we accepted the services of a state person to review the collection and the way it was displayed. But that turned out to be a disaster. But it only cost us money for our lunch. The collection fared well in its early days. It was new, presented a challenge, and there was no other local museum competing for contributions. So many great contributions were made to the collection from many sources. The name of Mrs. Richard, or Miss Ann Snively, comes to mind, as she was most generous in sharing her fine collection, which was, and perhaps still is, rich in local items. The library, a must for any collection, was started by Jim, and although small, was kept in excellent order and constituted a fine reference source. Attempts were made to work with the Waynesboro Historical Society, but for various reasons, the relationship, although friendly, was never warm. Up to this point, I have emphasized the museum and said little about the park. There was an urgency about opening the museum, as I have said, but no deadline for the park. It is only fair to say that our curators, Jim and his predecessors, were primarily collections people. And the acreage was left largely to Ed Miller, who did a bang-up job in keeping the grounds in good condition, establishing the picnic area, establishing the parking area, and putting in the necessary shrubbery in order to make it attractive. Also, this was not easy going, because about the time we got the picnic grove started, along came a flood and washed most of it out, and we had to start all over again. The stream, although very picturesque, as you look out the door of Renfrew, the stream can become very wild at times. And we had to really harness the stream with the placement of gambions and so on and so forth, so that it didn't overrun its banks, and ultimately take away a great deal of our property. That was a big problem, big problem and a big project. Early in the game, we did have a consultant for the grounds, and he was sent to us by the National Heritage. I don't know the gentleman's name, but he was a great big broad-shouldered fellow, and he came up with elaborate ideas at a price far beyond our means, such as trees at $250 a piece, and many of them not even native to this area. And of course, the maintenance would have been out of question for any project with a limited budget. And he also spoke in terms of an arboretum. And it was all so real to him, before he finished the meeting, we were all walking through the arboretum with trees 20 and 30 feet high. However, the attendance at the park steadily increased and were well patronized. The addition of the picnic pavilion, given by the Rouserville Lions Club, at first not enthusiastically received, has turned out to be a real plus. So within the limits of our budget, all seemed to be going along smoothly. Jim left to go elsewhere, and the search for a new curator was started. At that time, I left the area, went to another state, and had to resign from the board. Although I have continued an avid interest in the museum, but the only news that I get from the inner workings of the trustees and the management is what I read from the publications which they send out. Up to this point, I did not detect any radical change in the mission. Archaeologic digs had been carried out, an herb garden planted, nature and bird walks started, and restoring the old barn, not the new barn, the old barn, and the Fahnestock House was discussed at great length in trustee meetings. We talked about the costs. I was concerned about the impracticability of doing anything to the Fahnestock House. It was far removed from the center of activity. Security was a problem. At that time, there was no electricity, there was no phone, there was no water out there. So there were many problems. So all that was done to the Fahnestock House was to shore it up and board it up to make an effort to protect it from vandals. And this was done largely through the influence of Marion Grove. She was the one who engineered the project and I think raised some of the money toward having that done. At the of the board members at that time when I was serving, Helen Huffman, Bill Bowers, and I were strong and vocal advocates of the museum. And perhaps this group may have been responsible for the emphasis to have been tipped in its direction toward the museum. I can honestly say that any innovation whatsoever was first evaluated in light of Emmy Nicodemus's intention, as expressed in the will. After all, the majority of the trustees were close friends and associates of hers. The first disappointment came not too long after the museum and park were opened. At the onset, the gifts and so forth seemed to be ample, and the trust seemed to be ample for a comfortable operation. But with all the expenditures necessary to get the project on the road, we became financially strapped and had to borrow from the borough, although at a low interest rate. Had to do this in order to meet our financial obligations. That's the reason why many things were put on hold. We discussed air conditioning, we discussed humidity control, but we couldn't afford it. It was just out of the question. So we did operate well within our financial means. I now question, looking at the whole picture from 75 miles away, if the museum and park, with its expanding programs and services, will be able to continue in a healthy financial climate. It is common knowledge that interest rates are down, operational costs are up, and there is increasingly fewer dollars to be gotten from an already over-solicited public. Something to think about. I lived through the Great Depression. A very rude awakening to me was when I heard of the governing structure of the organization. I had been one of the trustees of the Alexander Hamilton Memorial Free Library for many years. The borough owned the library building, but the entire operation was up to the board of directors. We managed the personnel, the investments, the finances, and so forth, with only an annual report given to the town fathers, and we had an excellent relation with town council. To the contrary, the museum and park are rightfully owned by the borough, but was, and I suppose still, is under the thumb of the borough manager and the town council, who I am sure are dedicated politicians and skilled in judgment about sewers and paving, but are sadly lacking in the field of fine arts. So Big Daddy looks over the shoulders of the trustees and can say yes or no, and that is it. Several years ago, Jim Koenig, Bill Bowers, Ellen Hoover Hoffman, and I went over the entire collection, including a multitude of things improperly stored at that time in the attic of the house. Some were deteriorating. There were many duplicates, tables and chairs and so forth. Some few pieces on display were called married pieces and should not have been on display when the genuine article was available to take its place. Many items had no place in the collection, referring to those stored in the attic and elsewhere, including modern furniture and china. Some of the councilmen had never been in the establishment, yet recalling the shots from afar. So we invited them to visit. It was a cold, rainy Saturday. Despite the climate and the lack of refreshments, they were greatly impressed, and many remarked that they had no idea that such a place existed in around Waynesboro. The hard part, now for the hard part, why not let the trustees sell the duplicates and other selected items and use the funds from the sale to enhance the collection? For there are many areas in which additional furnishings and decorations could be used. The answer was no. However, and I do not understand the legality of this, many of Mrs. Nicodemus's items were sold at Blue Ridge Summit Auction shortly after her death. So you understand, the museum and park were, and I suppose still are, under the thumb of the Honorable Mayor, Mr. Hamburger, and the council. Such an arrangement is also a costly one, as Renfrew Amusement Park pay the borough at their wage schedule for many services, use of equipment, labor, bookkeeping, and so forth, when I am sure much of it could have been done in-house at a much lower cost. I don't know whether the system has changed or not. I hope so. I cannot express an opinion on the future. Old folks are much better talking about the past anyway. But I do sense or foresee some problems or some questions. One, how can there be a healthy balance of interest and fiscal support for both these entities, that is, the museum and the park? Two, is the operation becoming too big and too costly with, in quotations, financial judgment day, end quote, perhaps not too far away, not only for Renfrew, but for many others? Is the entire operation now consistent with the wishes of Mrs. Nicodemus as expressed in her will? Has the attendance in the park, which I understand is soaring, has that been reflected in an increased attendance in the museum, where there is a chance for cultural interpretations and educational value to anyone visiting the museum? Has anyone talked about accreditation? This is a very important step in museum life today, and although demanding, it is worthwhile. If you flunk the inspection, you have the advantage of outside people looking at your entire operation from financial statements to furnaces. They will soon let you know about the deficiencies, and the report is a valuable document and guideline for improving operations. Although grant money is drying up at all levels of government, it is nigh on to impossible this day and age to get any grants without displaying the Museum Association seal of accreditation. I was glad to learn that the heating had been improved and the air conditioning with humidity control had been installed. This is a must if you apply for accreditation. Now, in summary, I feel the trustees, in my experience, acted in good faith and were ever mindful of Emmy's ideas and wishes. As in the life of any individual, if he or she is honest, There are things that we did that we should not have done, and there are those things that we should have done, but did not do. I can assure you, however, that any errors were, in the words of that famous physician, Dr. William Osler, errors of head and not errors of heart. Thank you.